Chapter 24.
The grisly yet reliable fact about custom bounty hunter ships is that you can always count on them to have body bags stashed somewhere for the easy transport of their kills. They often had built-in refrigerated storage, too, and a small chamber that served as a brig for those bounties they needed to bring back alive. Much as it hurt, I searched for and found a body bag for Nakari in one of the ships that had its bay open. Then I trekked back into the forest and finally set eyes on her, visually confirming what I had already felt. I couldn't just leave her on Omarith. Fayette Kellen had already had his wife ripped from him with no way to say goodbye and let go. It was the very least I could do to take his daughter home. I owed her far more. Nakari had ragged holes in her from shrapnel. But I was relieved that she was at least still in one piece, and her eyes were already closed. R2 waited nearby, still smoking from where a bolt had destroyed his ion blaster and part of the socket where it had been attached. The rest of him was coated in a thin layer of black grit and carbon scoring. He greeted me with a morose moan instead of his usual burble. "We'll get you fixed, R2. I reassured him, and then I dropped to my knees next to Nakari, eyes welling up already. And in a strange way, I welcomed the blur to my vision and let the tears come. I'd never done so before because it had never seemed the proper time to mourn. Ben had been there when I discovered the burnt bodies of my aunt and uncle, and I bottled everything up in shock, telling myself that the Empire was hunting us, and we had to get to Alderaan. When Vader cut down Ben, there was no time to mourn him either. Only time to escape the Death Star and then join the Battle of Yavin. I lost my old friend Biggs to a TIE fighter during that battle. But I could hardly allow myself to think of that when I had to make my firing run down the trench. Then, incredibly, we won the day. And everyone was happy. There was always more work to do after that. It was never the right time to stop and feel all that I'd lost. But I had the time now. The Empire didn't know where I was. Drusel would wait until I returned, and R2 wouldn't judge me. So I finally opened up that bottle inside and let the grief pour out. Nakari's smile, Ben's teaching, my aunt and uncle joking around with Biggs, and so much more. All of it had been ripped from me by the war, and I'd repressed it all because I thought I had to. But no more. My throat constricted with emotion, and I lowered my head to Nakari's shoulder and allowed myself to feel it all. The complete tragedy that none of them would ever speak to me again. Even Ben's voice was gone now. Though it took a while. Eventually, I was spent and sat up, brushing a lock of hair away from Nakari's face and hooking it behind her ear. "I'm so sorry. You were more than just good for me. I should have said so." It was wholly inadequate. I couldn't think of what else to say. Recalling our conversation last night on Kupo, I wished I could go back to the Luke of a few hours ago and say, "Tell her how you feel now, Luke, while you still have the chance, because you'll always regret never saying the words." I'm not sure why I have such trouble with that. I don't know if it's a natural thing or something I learned from Uncle Owen. I know he had strong feelings, but he wasn't in the habit of giving them words. He would do small things for Aunt Beru, surprising kindnesses, and whenever she came across them, her eyes would light up, and she would smile and say softly, "Owen." That's how she knew. And that's the example I grew up with. You don't tell people you love them. You show them. Or maybe I'm just terrified of sounding like an idiot when I try to tell someone they make me glad to be alive. I hope my friends know that I would fight and die for them. And I also hope that is enough. Well, I'm afraid maybe it isn't. I might have stayed there on my knees staring at Nakari until sunset if I hadn't had Drusel waiting on me in the lagoon. Pointless, really. It wasn't like I would forget the sight anytime soon. But somehow, putting her in the bag meant I had to let her go. And I didn't want to. I needed to, though. I needed to let them all go. It took some effort, and a fresh string of tears rolled down my face in the process. But I got her inside, and asked R2 if he could make it back to the beach on his own, as I gently pulled the zipper closed. He beeped and edged forward as an answer. So I said, "Let's go." The thin plast material crackled as I picked up Nakari, and with some effort hitched her over my shoulder. Her physical weight didn't seem nearly as heavy as the pressure of my grief, and I knew I'd have to carry the grief much longer. We had the pick of 6 ships on the beach, but Drusel chose the one I had entered to find a body bag. It was the sleekest design among a heavily armored bunch, a dark blue beetle-shaped crate that may have belonged to the Dresselian whom Nakari had shot off the swoop bike. Drusel avoided the cockpit entirely, searching instead for the guts of the nav computer and the system service bay. R2 accompanied her, and I heard him chattering and the given mumbling to him as I gently lowered Nakari's body to the deck. Seeing the lifeless black lump of plast that represented her now, a surge of anger and the cold that came with it rose up inside me again. But I closed my eyes, focused on my breathing, and remembered laughing with her. The cold gradually turned to warmth, and I felt much better. Instead of feeling an impotent rage over all the time we wouldn't have, I determined to feel grateful for the time we did, because it had all been good, and not everyone gets to enjoy times like those. I care